You're listening to Listen Up with James Potts and co-hosts Jamal Potts and Zaylor Stout, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, Jim and Jamal and Zaylor are back on the air. And as always, thank you so much for tuning in on your afternoon, your Sunday afternoon, or your evening, wherever you may be. We always do appreciate it. Hey, guys, shout out to everybody.
Hey, happy Sunday, everybody. Uh-oh.
Zeller, we couldn't hear you, Zeller. But meanwhile, hey, we want to make sure we get that telephone number up on the screen in case anybody wants to call. Ah, there it is. Okay, Zeller, can you give us a signal again?
Oh yeah, welcome everyone.
Oh, okay, there we go.
Pull the liberal plug, man.
Yeah, you guys are starting already, man. Oh my God, come on, give me a break. Hey, listen, anybody interested in getting on our email blast? For the blogs, you can either email us at listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. That's listenupwithjp@pottsandassociates.com. Or you can text us as well. Text Potts Associates to 22828. Text Potts Associates to 22828 to get on that. Anybody wants to get on my Twitter, by the way, because I do put things on the Twitter, Jim Potts at Jim Potts Author. All right. So anybody wants to follow me on Twitter, that's Jim Potts, a Jim Potts author. All right. Today, we're going to be talking about a very controversial subject here. We're not off the police yet. This police reform, is still out there. Things are still pending. A lot of different opinions that are floating around regarding the police reform. So we're going to be talking about that today for sure. And that's going to take up the majority of our time. Before we get started, Azela, do you have any a blast or any kind of little shout out at the beginning? Or are you good?
I'm good. I'm always interested to see what Jamal's got.
Well, you know.
I do want to send a special shout out, man, because a kid that I was on the coaching staff with that played with my son was drafted to the NFL yesterday. Wow. So shout out to Darren Hall, man, who was selected in the fourth round to the Atlanta Falcons. So I want to send a special salute to that guy and his family, man. I'm proud of him. And then also, man, I just want to bring to y'all attention, man, it's happening again, guys. Once again, bro, there is a chicken shortage due to the chicken sandwich craze that KFC got going on right now.
Chicken shortage sandwich?
Yeah. Shortage. You know, remember Popeyes had the chicken sandwich?
Yeah.
So that is a chicken shortage again. So, yeah, there's a shortage of chicken due to KFC's new chicken sandwich that everybody's going crazy about. I don't know if they're killing each other yet, but hopefully not. And then also Wingstop is suffering behind it, too. So
I don't go to Wingstop, okay? We went there one time and didn't like their stuff. And then this other business, we're really trying to stay away from the fast food side. So, but anyway, okay, Jamal, thanks for that. Hey, I do have I guess it's a shout-out. I don't have anybody on blast, but I put this out on Twitter today, and I decided I wanted to read it on the show at the beginning as a shout-out to Mahatma Gandhi, all right? Remember Mahatma Gandhi, all right? He had 7 social sins, and I want to read those social sins because I really do think this is very timely in everything that's going on. Number one social sin, wealth without work. 2, pleasure without conscience. 3, knowledge without character. 4, commerce without morality. 5, science without humanity. 6, religion without sacrifice. And number 7, last but not least, politics without principle. Those are Mahatma Gandhi's 7 social sins. And I swear, I think that these are very, very timely right now with everything that's going on and has been going on, quite frankly. I'm not pointing out any particular year, but these are the things I think that we've been faced with over the last few years, quite frankly, in many different respects. So I wanted to put that out there on the air today. Okay, having said that, let's get into our emails today. Unless you guys have any comments you want to make.
No, man, I love these emails, man.
Okay, all right. First one. Jim, I'd listened to President Biden talking about corporations, taxes, and CEOs and their compensation. Does he understand that businesses are the backbone of this country? We start our businesses from the ground up and make sacrifices to make it successful. A lot of us live paycheck to paycheck, just like our employees. Obama had the same attitude, and neither one of them ever owned a business. I would like to hear your opinion. Don from St. Louis, Missouri. Okay, Don. First of all, I am, okay, a business owner. I started mine from the ground up. Matter of fact, Jamal, you might recall seeing me working in my living room, you know, at that time when you were, I don't know, 5 years old, 6 years old, whatever the heck it was. So I did hear what Biden said. Biden, in my opinion, was, you know, I don't know who he was aiming it at, but I will say 80% of the businesses in this country, Don, are in fact small businesses. And I think that some of the points he was making was that everybody has to pay their fair share. And I think he was looking at some of these larger corporations, but he didn't say that. So to me, it was a broad stroke situation. You know, just in the business that we're in, and Zeller, you can kind of amen this little piece of it, that a lot of employees for the clients that we have, because we do a lot of work with employers, and blah, 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 blah. And it doesn't always work out that way. There are businesses that really, quite honestly, they do live paycheck to paycheck, or they live on these shoestring budgets. I mean, restaurants, there's not a lot of profit in restaurants, you know, as an example. I'm sure some of the other businesses are out there as well. So, no, I don't appreciate anything that knocks down these businesses, but I'm not opposed to the fact that everybody needs to pay their fair share of taxes. And I think that we all at some time on our tax, oh, wait, I don't want to say this on the air, but anyway, I think everybody needs to pay their fair share of the taxes. And I'm talking fair share, and that's everybody. Zella, I'm going to let you go first, and then Jamal, I'm going to come to you.
Yeah, I think the debate is in regards to what the fair share is. And part of the other aspect is the gap between the amount that some of the you know, CEOs of some of these larger companies compared to the price of their lowest paid employee, that wage gap there is, I think, a lot of what economists and folks have been fighting with, and say that it's the more money that goes into fewer hands, then that's less money that's circulating in the economy. And so there's the idea is to make sure that there's some greater equity as it relates to money being shared in regards to employees.
Okay, well, wait a minute. I want to just comment on that before we move on to Jamal's opinion on that. But let's just be clear here. Okay, let's just be clear. When we talk about the difference between what a CEO is making and what the lowest paid employee is making, that lower paid employee, first of all, I don't know their experience. Maybe they're just fresh out of high school, so they're a minimum wage earner. I don't know. But in addition to that, CEOs have made their sacrifices. They just didn't just wake up one morning and they were successful and they were making their money. Okay. We got a message that came in already. So Biden was referring to big corporations, some of which do not pay any taxes. And I got that. Biden did point that out. Okay. That those bigger guys figure out how to get out of it. But he also just talked about corporations in general before he talked about that piece of it. Jamal, go ahead and weigh in.
Me personally, man, I'm all for tax cuts even for them. And the reason why that is because if you employ X amount of people, you're producing taxpayers. That's the only way that can work. So they're still generating a lot of taxes from the people that these employers are producing. And another thing is, I don't know how many people out there are tax cheats, man, because I've never known anybody to get away with the IRS, man. The IRS goes through everybody with a fine tooth comb, excuse me. So I don't know who Joe Biden was exactly pointing out, but I think he should call out names. He should specify, instead of grouping everybody together, let's call out the individuals that he says is cheating, not paying their fair share of taxes.
Or you know, about what Biden said about the big corporations. But again, I think that he was talking about corporations in general. Because when he starts talking about changing the taxes from 21 to 28%, that's all corporations. That's not just the big corporations, okay? But addressing this in terms of some of these corporations that don't end up paying anything. And Jamal, I want to address what you said. Those big corporations, they employ thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people. Okay. And I do agree with that. You know, so look, just because they made it and they're successful, I don't think that they should be scrutinized. Okay. Because the CEO makes X numbers of dollars. It takes a lot to run these corporations. You guys have seen me just with the small corporation that I have. I mean, it takes a lot to keep up on top of that stuff, including the taxes. It really is a pain in the butt. And every year we got to sit down with our accountants and go through this, you know, and I'm one of those guys that I've had to pay taxes, you know. So you know, you make a profit, but on the profit, I got to be honest with you. You make a profit, but hell, you know, 30 some odd percent goes to the government and the taxes on the profit that you did make. Well, you know, I still have a responsibility to X number of employees that are working for me. You know, I've had responsibility to up to what you guys know, 14 families, you know, with 100% medical benefits that I provide for clients. I mean, for employees. So it does get to be tough out there.
Well, you know, one of my biggest things is too, man, I can't stand people counting other people's money. Meaning, you know what I'm saying? Well, they got $5 million. You can take more from it. I can't stand that. If you're going to take 10% from the lower, take only 10% from the higher. I like to see a fair tax rate across the board for everybody. If it's 10%, just to throw a number out there, it should be 10% for everybody. I can't stand people saying they don't need all that money. How you know what they need?
Zella, what do you think?
Oh, I was able to find out my statistics. So, back in 1965, the CEOs made on average 21 times what their typical worker made, and now it's 320 times that. So I guess my only question is are the CEOs these days doing that much more work than the CEOs back in 65? I don't know. Not my fight, but you asked for me to respond in regard to that question, and so I provided some context.
I don't care if it's 500% more, so what? And I don't know what the money was back then, you know, in 1965 versus what it is now. But still, running those big organizations like that, they earn the right to be where they are. They just didn't just walk into that position. You know, we got one person that said hello from Darby, Pennsylvania. Hello. Or, yeah. At any rate, look, let me say something else. Why is it that we're talking about just the corporations? We got to talk about individuals also. Jamal, before we got on the air, we were talking about some of these Hollywood stars. As an example, some of these guys are making millions upon millions upon millions of dollars. You think all of those guys are paying their fair share as well? Well,
that's I do. Ask Wesley Snipes.
Well, he ended up paying his fair share because he ended up going to jail. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
We got somebody else that texted us that there are different types of taxes, corporate taxes, payroll taxes, and local and state taxes, which is all true as well. You know, so look, I don't know. We could debate about about this all day. We're going to move on. All right. All right. So, Don, I hope that answers your question. Jim. What are your thoughts about kids getting back to school and the teachers in most cases not wanting to go back into the classroom? Our children are suffering and Biden was no help since he is supported by the union. That's from Jason from Van Nuys, California. Jason, my kids are all out of school. I got grandkids that are in school. Not in school. I mean, they're all doing it by Zoom, et cetera. But everything that I'm hearing is that there are issues with these kids. And so what do I say? I'm not going to just blame Biden on this, quite frankly, because the way I look at it, you know, he's only one small part of this. Okay. Yes, he's president, but I think that stuff has to be handled on a local level, not from a federal standpoint. I think each jurisdiction, each state and each school district needs to make the determination as to whether or not their facility is safe enough for the children to return back to school. Jamal, I'll let you go first and then come to Zeller.
Once again, I think these teacher unions suck. I think that's the bottom line, man. A lot of them, they have too much power to control too much. It's time for these kids to go back to school. You know, it's no more sitting around on your butt. We got through the pandemic. It's time to get these kids back in the classroom because these kids' focus is not the same sitting at home on a computer and a laptop. You can't put a 5-year-old or 6-year-old, 7-year-old in front of a laptop. It's just too hard to do. It's too much of a distraction. They need to have that structure, that classroom structure.
And what about the interaction with the other students? I think that's important also, part of our growth.
Right, absolutely. Social skills.
Right. Zella, what do you think?
That, again, it's on a state-by-state, county-by-county basis in regards to what's safe for kids to go back. You know, at the end of the day, teachers are employees too, and they're concerned about their health and the health of their family. So, it's a hard decision to make in regards to when it's right. I don't think there's an easy answer in regards to any of it.
Well, we got somebody else that tucked in and said, Biden was no help, ? Jason doesn't know what he's talking about. Biden wants to get the kids back as soon as possible, as safely as possible. Well, Biden said that possibly in the fall. I think people were looking for something probably before then. That's what I said, that Biden to me is just a small part of it. Somebody else typed in, you know, standing in the agreement, but you know, I think that in all honesty, this issue about the schools does have to be handled on a local level. And I think all of us are probably in agreement on that. But you know what? Some of these teachers are getting out of control with some of this. They're talking about, I don't think they, some of them want to go back into the classroom because they're at home on Zoom and they're doing it that way, because I think that that's just easier and better. Employers need to have it. We have somebody else that's clicking in saying they need to go back. They need to get back in the classroom. It's true. You know, I think that the colleges are saying that these children are really suffering.
Would you agree the teachers union is part of this problem?
Of course. Why wouldn't they be? Right. The union is controlled by their constituents, so to speak. So, but if the teachers are telling the union, we don't want to go back, the union's going to say, well, if you don't want to go back, you don't have to go back. They're going to support them. You know, so I don't hold the union responsible from that standpoint. If you're an individual, you know, and you're a teacher, and you want to get back in the classroom, you know, then you get back in the classroom. All right. Let's look at the last comment. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Zeller.
There's actually a lot of experienced teachers that are just retired, that have just chose to retire as of last year, really early. So it'll be interesting to see if we have a shortage of teachers because of the pandemic.
Well, we're going to have a lot of shortage of police officers. That's one of the other things, you know, same thing. But at any rate, guys, this one came in and said, guys, I just wanted to say, it makes for really good listening on your show. Three different opinions, at least sometimes, humor and thought-provoking discussions. Keep it up. And that's from Mary from Scottsdale, Arizona. So I wanted to put that out there to know that people do appreciate, you know, the information that we are, and the show. We got somebody that says all the teachers just need to get vaccinated. I don't understand their problem. Well, I don't think the teachers, I understand their problem. I think if they don't want to get back in the classroom, because it's a hell of a lot easier being at home in your bathrobe or whatever the case may be to, you know, to be able to teach this way.
Well, can I throw in a question in regards to that? I think some part of the issue is the fact that kids haven't been able to get vaccinated until recently, even if it's available yet. So I think that's part of what the teacher's concern is as well. Remember, they have to go back to their families. So fine, they get vaccinated, but they can still, I don't know, potentially take it and be carriers to their families. That I think that might be what the issue is. Whereas if we get through the summer and the vaccinations are then available to the kids that are coming, I don't think that there would be as much of an issue.
Well, let's just be clear now. These kids have been shown so far that they're not really the spreaders, though. And the vaccinations right now are for 16 on up, not the younger ones. So I don't think that the younger ones are really the issue if these kids want to get back in school. I'm just telling you that's, you know, they always talk about follow the science. Well, those aren't the ones that are spreading it, so to speak. So I don't know. There was a school in Boston, the Archdiocese in Boston. They've had classes ever since this whole thing started. Teachers going there, zero issues with COVID, zero issues. Boston Unified School District. Look it up. Okay, let's see. What somebody says, let's see here what we got. I'm a government and wants to close all schools and have homeschooling. Well, some of them, you know, homeschooling, some people are in favor of homeschooling, you know, which might be an alternative for some. It might work for some people. It's not going to work for everybody is the bottom line. So I don't know. We have to wait and see. All right, you guys, let's get into this business regarding the and I'm going to have Zeller. I'm going to make a little introductory pitch right here first on the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act of 2021. The bill addresses a wide range of policies and issues regarding policing practices and law enforcement accountability. It increases accountability for law enforcement misconduct, restricts the use of certain policing practices, enhances transparency and data collection, and establishes best practices and training requirement. The bill enhances existing enforcement mechanisms to remedy violations by law enforcement. And then I've got some bullet points here that it gives, but I'm gonna kind of give Zeller the lead on this. I just wanted to do that introduction real quick. Go ahead, Zeller.
Well, no, I mean this isn't the first year that they've tried to move forward in regards to some police reform on a federal basis. You know, states have been struggling with it, but I do think that there should be a federal standard in regards to what the minimum expectations are for the conduct of police officers and being able to hopefully, you know, to at least have the appearance that police officers can be held accountable. You know, and for example, the qualified immunity is like the big the big pushback in regard to that. And it sounds like part of the negotiation between, you know, the parties on that is going to be that the police departments are the ones that are, that can then be sued as opposed to the city. But that doesn't necessarily help because the police department gets their budget from the city. So in essence, still, it's the city that's paying for it. And so, you know, there has to be a way to incentivize, perhaps, you know, police officers to, you know, not engage in some of the conduct that results in there being lawsuits. And how about that? That's I think, a diplomatic way of seeing it.
You know, it'd be a good idea, in my opinion, is if each individual police officer has to carry some type of insurance, and he can only work if he's insured. That way, if he's got too many lawsuits against him and the insurance got to cover it, insurance want to drop out, he can't work if unless he's individually insured. I know they talked about ideas like that, you know. There's got to be something done.
Well, let's be clear. First of all, most people that own a home, okay, I can't speak for everybody, but most people that own a home, Jamal, there are insurance policy normally covers if they get sued. So civil liability. I mean, it may not be every policy that's out there, but that's in a lot of them. Zayla, I thought you were going to address specifically the George Floyd Justice of Policing Act of 2021. Let me read off something here in reference to what the act itself is proposing. For one thing, it says lowers the criminal intent standard from willful to knowing or reckless to convict a law enforcement officer for misconduct in a federal prosecution. Okay. Now, look, first of all, I don't understand that one, because first of all, when you talk about federal versus state, I think any state or any agency, they could go after them anyway. Okay. But what I have an issue with is that when we start talking about things like lowers the criminal intent standard from willful to knowing or reckless, who's going to determine the reckless part of it? Now, I admit this gentleman that just got convicted, Chauvin, that was reckless behavior, in my opinion. That to me was just easy. But some people may argue that what he did was intentional. So when you start, and Zayla, you can amen the fact that when people start arguing points of law, and these intent factors, you know, even when we were in law school, they had all different levels of what is intent, what isn't intent, what's willful, what's not willful. It's still not going to be clear even to the everyday citizen, so to speak, because they're not going to understand the legal leaves behind some of this, in my opinion.
Yeah, but I would say that it you said who's the one that's going to make the decision. It's going to be the jury that's the ones that's going to make the decision.
That's and where we are right now.
Well, if it means that the standard is lowered so that more officers can be held liable for their conduct while they're, you know, uniformed police officers conducting their duties, then that may, they give officers pause in regard to some of that conduct moving forward. You know, it's just like when we're talking to employers and we're ensuring that, you know, when you enforce your company's policies and procedures, even if you hadn't been doing it before, people catch wind and then they stop engaging in the conduct that results in them getting in trouble. So, you know, I think that the changing the willfulness standard and lowering it, again, I don't know if this is the right answer or the wrong answer. All we know is that there are situations where it appears as though there's been intentional conduct where officers haven't been held accountable. And the public is concerned in regard to that. And it's not just one segment of the population that's concerned about.
Well, I think what should also be included in reckless behavior, and I don't care what anybody says, you shoot somebody and they only had a cell phone in their hand, or that the whole concept that, you know, that they get off because they thought somebody had a gun. I just think that's reckless behavior. I worked in armored truck for 8 years. Okay. I couldn't go over shooting in trouble. I don't understand why law enforcement is not held to the same standard, even though I was legally carrying also. So those are the things that I don't understand. And I think those things are reckless behavior.
Well, that's because you guys have never worked the streets. Let me tell you something. You guys know the story, okay, about how I got a call one night when I was on patrol about a guy with a knife that went underneath this little small bridge, okay? And the citizens, when I pulled up, said, yeah, we just saw this guy. He's got a knife. He just went under that little bridge. I said, okay, I'll go down there. I go down the little hill to the wash to look down there, and I could see the guy's silhouette, and sure enough, the guy, you guys remember me telling you the story, sure enough, the guy had an object in his hand that looked like a knife to me. Now, again, it was a silhouette. I told the guy, I gave the guy a command, okay? You know, put down what you have in your hand. The guy didn't do it, and the guy starts walking towards me. Now, I'm on the outside of the bridge. He's about halfway into the bridge, and now he's continuing to walk toward me, ignoring the command as he's walking toward me. The sergeant was up on the road watching, and then when he kept walking toward me, at that point, I drew my weapon. I didn't draw my weapon before I went down the hill. I drew it when he started walking towards me. And when I said, gave the command and kept giving it, she took out her weapon because obviously something was going, looks like something was going down. The closer he got to me, okay, now I'm in a ready position. Put down the object in your hand. Put down the object in your hand. When he came out underneath the bridge enough for me to be able to see him, and now you're only talking about that maybe he's like, I don't know, 6 or 7 feet, 8 feet maybe from me. He actually had a stick in his hand. It was a stick, okay? But the stick was shaped, in my opinion, and their opinion, like a knife. Now, here's a situation where I'm not going to panic mode, and I understand what Zeller's, I understand what both of you are saying. Mm-hmm. Somebody else may have shot the guy, okay? Mm-hmm. So all police officers, though, don't go into a panic mode with some of this. And fortunately, can you imagine if I had shot that guy, he fell down, and the stick just fell in the weeds right there. We're all looking for a knife, and ain't no knife. What happened to the knife? You follow what I'm saying? So what I'm trying to tell you guys is that when you say that the guy looked like he had a cell phone, I mean, it was a cell phone in his hand. How could he mistake that for a weapon? You got to take all of the facts around what's going on. Was the lights dim? Was it bright outside? What was it? Was he told to drop whatever he had in his hand? There's so many things to go into. Once again, a quick minute decision sometimes, like this guy the other day in Ohio, 11 seconds to make a decision on what to do. You guys don't, you can't get a full appreciation for that. And I'm not justifying bad police work, okay, where people just do things sometimes that are stupid. Somebody just wrote in, the good cops should weed out the bad cops who are making the good cops look bad. The blue wall of silence needs to go.
But, I agree.
You know,
look, the way you handle that situation is the way I want to hold all police officers to that same standard that you performed. That's all I'm trying to say. You handled that situation perfectly.
I get it, okay? But all I'm saying is that, look, some of these guys, they work the streets so long, unfortunately, they get into these scenarios and you just never know what may happen. Somebody just typed in that they agree, okay, with what you just said as well.
The example that you provided with the guy that was under the embankment, I mean, you probably would have been justified in shooting him. And based on police training and everything, you asked him to drop it 3 times. He was coming towards you. You probably would have been justified in being able to do it. But again, but there was this humanity aspect that I don't know what was going through your mind in regards to that. But you gave it enough time to really figure it out, so that right. You weren't making the conclusions in regards to what was there. Again, not trying to second guess every single police officer's interaction. All I can say is, from a layman, that is not a police officer, has never worked in law enforcement, you know, the hundreds of police shootings and stuff and things of that nature, all of them can't be right. The stats just don't flesh out that way. And then you see videos of situations going on, and if they can't be held accountable, if you can't hold the bad police officers.
But who's saying that? I don't agree with that. I'm not saying we can't hold a bad officer accountable. Chauvin was a bad officer, and he got held accountable.
Yeah.
It's what you want is 100% of the time. No. Okay. And let me just tell you something. You said that if I had shot that guy, that would have been a justifiable shoot. Here's the deal. If I was white, he was black, and I shot him, trust me, it would have been on the news. Okay? My point is that with all of the millions of calls that police officers go on every year, the percentages that you're talking about are very, very small. And I understand that those situations for families and somebody that gets killed can be devastating. I get that. But all of the police encounters a year, it's millions of them. Millions. And it's what you're talking about. Let's say 200 shootings a year, okay, that you feel may be unjustified or whatever. 200 shootings a year may be unjustified or whatever. That's still a very, very small percentage is the only point that I'm making. And I'm not saying that we should not address this in police reform. I'm only saying that what we're talking about here is a standard and changing the criminal intent standard, and they're going to turn around and say willful to knowing or reckless. Okay, I don't know that very easily. Okay, if you've got a jury and this is a very emotional issue, everything police officers may do when there's a shooting is claim that it's reckless. I don't know. Okay,
shouldn't a police officer be held to a higher standard than the average everyday citizen?
He carries a gun. I don't disagree with that.
Right. And that's all I'm saying. I'm saying if Jamal Potts could not get away with something like that, shooting somebody because it was an argument and I thought they had a gun, I don't think a police officer should be able to get away with that either.
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
Once again, some individuals, private citizens that have used a weapon, okay, and they've been held accountable for it also. So everybody just doesn't get away with it. Look, I understand what you're saying, but the police, I don't think a bad shoot, they should get away with it. It's going to be who determines the bad shoot. And I think each department, okay, has their standards. LA County Sheriff's Department, high standards. If there's a shoot, it's going to be investigated, period.
The only reason why anybody should be shot and killed is if somebody's life is in imminent danger.
It could be the police officer's life is in imminent danger, or they think that it's in imminent danger.
See, that's what I'm, I don't want to hear I think. I just, when a life is on the line, I don't want to hear I think.
Hey guys, police officers want to go home every night also to their families, okay?
And so is the person they shot.
I get that too. But some people put themselves in that position too, and that's the unfortunate part.
And then the Micaiah Bryant, is that the young lady name?
The last one, yeah.
I saw that video, and I feel like that was a justifiable shooting. Right. Somebody's life was in imminent danger. I know people were upset. You know what I mean? I call out police brutality when they're in the wrong, but I think in that case, that cop should be held a hero.
You're talking about the Ohio shooting with the lady that was wheeling, the young lady that was wheeling the knife.
Yes. Clearly to me, it appears she was getting ready to stab somebody. You know what I mean?
Look at the backlash. Look at the backlash and the protest, even with that. Clear shoot didn't matter. They're still going to riot. They're still going to march. They're still going to do the things that they do.
It doesn't mean everybody's going to agree with it. Everybody's still entitled to their opinion.
I think the problem is the fact that when it's clear that blatant misconduct or the overuse of force and those officers haven't been held accountable, then you protest on everything, right? Whereas if there were more circumstances where these very public, visible cases where those officers are held accountable, then you don't have to scream about every single situation that happens.
Because you know that happens, man. Every time there's a police shooting, why do you break into and rob stores? What does that have to do with it? What does that have to, and I'm not saying, let me just correct it, because I know what Sal is going to say. Hey, Jim, it's not 100% of the time, but let's just talk about what has happened. The insurance company is not going to cover $27 million for just one incident like George Floyd. These insurance companies have to pay out too, is what somebody just typed in.
Yep.
At any rate, I'm just saying that, look, breaking into an innocent person's store because somebody gets shot by a police officer, what does that have to do with the shooting of the police officer?
I don't know if Jamal or I indicated that rioting is appropriate.
You can
throw that flag down. Nobody said any of that. We were talking about protesting police misconduct.
And there's a difference between the protesting.
I know, but why are you bringing it up then?
Because that's what people do.
Man,
okay? That's what people do. I didn't say you and Jamal subscribe to that. I just said, why do people do that? I did that in the form of a question, not an accusation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, people find every excuse to riot. If their favorite hockey team won a championship, won a Stanley Cup, these people are rioting in the streets.
That's not called rioting when that happens.
Right. When the Lakers won a championship, there was rioting in the streets. You know what I mean? People use any excuse to riot. You know what I mean? But those are the bad apples, as you know, people like to use those terms. It's not the whole group.
Let's look at the second point with this. It limits qualified immunity as a defense to liability in a private civil action against a law enforcement officer. Limits qualified immunity as a defense. I got some other text messages coming here. I saw a video of a protester stating that looting high-end stores is a part of reparations. Oh, okay. I'm okay with it, but this was on the other part. I'm okay with it, but let's do the same for Senate, House, and other politicians. I think it goes back to the other issue about accountability. But anyway, so limits qualified immunity as a defense to liability in a private civil action against law enforcement. So, Zeller, I mean, you know, you're in civil litigation as well. I mean, I don't have a problem with that, personally.
Really, I'm surprised you don't have a problem with it. That's the biggest sticking point right now, I think, with even in state legislatures in regards to that. But here's the thing. It's like, you know, if the worst thing that could happen to you if you're a police officer and that you shoot somebody is that you can lose your job, right? And that the standard is so high in regards to holding you criminally liable that you likely won't end up being held criminally liable. Where is the incentive not to, you know, engage in conduct that's not appropriate?
But wait a minute. Qualified immunity, first of all, when we talk about getting sued, okay? I mean, you and I have seen enough lawsuits to know that the person is going to go after the deep pocket. So let's just talk about civil litigation real quick, Jamal, before we let you jump in, so that people understand about civil litigation. Because you know and I know they're talking about this guy getting sued. This guy is a police officer. How much money are they going to get out of this guy versus them suing the police department as well as the city who he works for? That's where the money is. It's not going to be on an individual basis. You know that.
Well, can where
the money's going to come from. Great, Jamal.
Well, can they sue both the person, yeah, the individual, and the company?
Absolutely.
Because to me, that police department should be held accountable, considering the fact that man had 17 prior issues before that incident, or some big number, 13 to 17, whatever it was. So that police department should be held accountable. Why they didn't fire that man? I've seen people get fired for screwing up paperwork. You know what I mean?
It's called negligent retention. Okay, negligent retention. You knew this guy was this way. You didn't take any action on it. Right. Now the dollars start to go up. Okay, so look, I'm not saying, you know, qualified immunity. Again, the person is still going to get sued. What is he going to lose? They're going to, you know, this recent thing with I forget which was the verdict. Oh, it was in with George Floyd. It was $27 million. The city settled for $27 million. How much of that $27 million was Chauvin going to be financially responsible for? Zero. I get that. But how much does he have? Ain't nobody thinking about suing an individual like that. They're going after the bigger bucks anyway, man.
Taxpayers had to pay for.
Yeah, exactly. The taxpayers are going to have to pay for that. So I don't disagree with this. If they want to say, you know what, they don't have immunity. Okay, so what? How much is this guy going to end up paying in the long run anyway? And if he really did not do anything wrong, but they're suing and settling, he's going to be off the hook anyway. So I'm not sure what's going to be accomplished by this, but I'm personally not against it. Make them accountable. I don't have an issue with it. Okay.
We've had clients that have had managers engage in conduct, let's say sexual harassment situations, where it was outside the scope of the employment, and the employer's like, nope, sorry. We've trained you in regards to not engaging in this conduct. This is what the allegation has been. You have to go get your own defense attorney. You have to pay for your own defense. You have to do all that on your own, because our interests aren't aligned in regards to the defense. That I see it as being the same situation in regards to the civil situation here, right? Because exactly what they brought up with the Chauvin trial is that, you know, they weren't trained to use this particular technique, so that wasn't something that was in the protocol. So this would be a situation where they would say, hey, you have to get your own defense. But remember, the jury, this particular trial had 46 witnesses. Every case isn't going to have 46 witnesses and hours of video from every single angle in regards to what happened. And that's the challenge.
Jamal, somebody is posing a question to you. So Jamal, is Jamal okay with taxpayers paying for misdeeds of police? That question is being posed to you.
No, that's why I was saying I would prefer. I don't like that. That's why I was saying I prefer if they could go after the individual, particularly the individual.
But how much money are they going to get? Is all that I say. These policemen are not rich. Okay. How much money do you think that they're really going to get? The plaintiff attorneys, they may include them in the lawsuit. They ain't going to give a jack about that police officer's money, Jamal.
Right.
They get 50 grand out of it. That family's not looking for 50 grand. They're looking for the millions. So the point is that they want to put this in there. I don't have a problem with it, but it's not going to me. That's not going to go.
See, and that's the problem. We got to make it at least financially hurt the right people and not necessarily the taxpaying citizen. So to answer that person's question, no, I don't want to see the taxpayers pay for this kind of stuff, for the police misdeeds. No, I don't want to see that. But the okay.
No, here's an email that just came in, and I know this person. Okay. But it says, without qualified immunity, what employee will want to take a personal risk in performing duties in the nature of the employer? Even a cop in Bryant shooting would not want to take life-saving action. Then what? And that's a good point, too, because now you're going to be talking about, okay, you know what? If I got a risk that I'm going to be sued personally or whatever the case may be, I'm not drawing my weapon. So whatever goes down out there, forget it. Now watch what will happen. they'll be sued for negligence. Why didn't you? If that cop with the 11 seconds had walked up, saw that situation going on, and said, you know what? There's no way I'm shooting a black person today. And that woman had gotten, had stabbed the other woman. You're telling me that, I'm not saying that you are. This is just a statement. What would have happened? They would have sued him because for failing to do his job as a police officer to protect the public. Now, come on. Am I right or wrong?
I don't think he would have been. I don't. If they would have sued him, I don't think they would have won.
That this is nobody's talking about winning and losing. Right. Okay. What, you know, that would have been the outcry. Why didn't you do something? That's the dilemma police officers are being put in right now. Right. They got police officers resigning and retiring early all across the country. You know what would happen? What would happen if all police agencies said, you know what? For the next 30 days, we're staying at home across the country. You think everything would just be quiet? Everything would just be quiet. There'd be no crime, no killings, nothing for those 30 days. You know that's not going to happen. Let's go to the third one.
Let them try it then.
I'm for it. Hey, I say it. You know, I ain't worried. I got my protections.
Yeah, me too.
Let's look at the next one. Grants administrative subpoena power to the Department of Justice in pattern or practice investigations. All right. Now, it's what it's supposed to do is establish a framework to prevent and remedy racial profiling by law enforcement at the federal, state, and local levels. It also limits the unnecessary use of force and restricts the use of no-knock warrants, chokeholds, and carotid holes. Look, first of all, I got to address the racial profiling. Okay, we're getting messages. Hold on. Have cities stopped the police from citing citizens for taillights, traffic issues, and maybe the police officers' life can be saved? Well, that's true too. A lot of those stops, that's exactly what happens. But I know they were talking about some of that as well. But let's just talk about racial profiling as an example. You know, people have this general thing, and it's being pushed, okay, that, you know, there's this racial profiling going on. As if each law enforcement agency out there is saying, okay, today, you guys, how many black people can you shoot? Okay, how many black people can you harass? Now, look, all of these agencies are independent of each other. And I'm not saying 30 years ago, 40 years ago in some southern state, you know, they all gathered around and they're going to get every black person they can. I'm not saying that. I'm talking about today. I mean, I worked with the LA County Sheriff's Department for 20 years. Nobody ever talked about getting out there and looking for anybody of any particular race, nationality, whatever the case may be. Here's the problem. When you start talking about racial profiling, I don't believe it's a law enforcement issue per se, as if people are saying, go do this. I think the problem is that there are individuals out there that may have issues, okay, of this kind. And they are doing things along those prejudicial lines. And that's what I think is on an individual basis, not a departmental, you know, a guideline. Go ahead, Zeller.
I think Jamal has an adequate response to this one that he was holding on to from last week.
That's why I wanted to hear your opinion.
I don't remember what I had, because I know I get a little flustered sometimes, but you can't tell me the people getting pulled over in Beverly Hills is getting the same treatment as the people that's getting pulled over, I don't know, on Crenshaw and
why are the people getting pulled over in Beverly Hills versus the ones on Crenshaw?
Well, I'm glad you asked.
Jamal, let me tell you something. Police officers, we had a list of things that we did look for probable cause to pull over a vehicle, okay? We're still out there doing our jobs. It's called law enforcement. Taillight is out, okay? These different issues. Taillights may not be out in Beverly Hills. More taillights may be out on Crenshaw that you were talking about.
Once again, me and a friend of mine going to work. Headlight is out. Why am I getting a gun pulled on me because the headlight
is out? Why is your headlight out? If the headlight wasn't out, you wouldn't have gotten pulled over.
So if the me that if Lewis Winston III got pulled over in Beverly Hills on Wilshire and Rodeo, they would have pulled a gun out on him. Just tell me that.
Jamal, let me ask you a question. What time?
Answer that question first.
It was at night, okay? And how many people were in the car?
Two. With Lewis Winston III.
Two people in the car over at night. And exactly Wilshire. Where did this take place? At Beverly Hills?
No, actually, was on the way to Hollywood, Western and Santa Monica.
Western and Santa Monica. Okay, that's LAPD, right? So LAPD, headlight is out. They pull you over. It's at night. What time of night was it? 2 o'clock in the morning? 1 o'clock in the morning?
It is.
The point of the story.
Lewis?
you know,
get pulled over.
Jamal, here's the deal. Jamal, here's
the deal. Answer the question, sir.
I'm going to. Jamal, answer your question.
He's being argumentative, Your Honor.
Here's the deal.
Not answering the question.
The deal is, you don't know what call, okay, or what we call it a bolo, be on the lookout for. You don't know what we were told before we even went out. When we did our briefing, maybe there was a car, okay? It was the same color make as your car, okay? That two people just got through robbing a convenience store, so be on the lookout for this particular vehicle. They pulled you over, the vehicle matched, who knows? The excuse that they use is the fact that there was a headlight out, okay? That's what I'm trying to tell you. You guys don't understand the behind-the-scenes things that can happen out there because you guys have never worked the street.
So you're telling me Mr. Goldstein would have got pulled over at gunpoint for a headlight out? That's all I want to know, man.
I don't know who Mr. Goldstein is. Who's Mr. Goldstein?
Look, you know what I'm trying to say, man.
No, I don't.
It wasn't Jamal. It wasn't Tyrone. You know what I mean? Trust me.
Well, Jamal, I get pulled over. I was younger. I got pulled over in the middle of the night. Nobody drew a gun on me, and I was black then. So same way I'm black now.
I would have loved to know the good reason.
Here's what it says. It's not racial profiling. Cops profile crook characteristics. Some groups may like to adopt similar characteristics to crooks. But lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas.
Oh, Lord. Wow.
You gonna let them talk about your son this way?
under these circumstances, yes. Because you ain't saying nothing.
Well, typical cop. That's why we feel that way.
You know.
That's messed up.
Hang on a second. This person said what? I am so white looking. And I had a gun drawn by a cop on me in Venice because a car and a drug deal was similar to mine. And those are the stories. You just don't know the behind-the-scenes thing sometimes, guys, is all that I'm saying. But let's move on to the racial profiling. I'm sorry.
One quick thing. You know, for Philando Castillo, one of the guys that was killed here in Minneapolis, his video, his killing was on Facebook Live. The girlfriend took it, right? He had a gun. But it was in the car. He told the officer, did everything he was supposed to be doing. You know, he had been pulled over by the police 30 to 40 times over the course of his lifetime. And so the only question is, you know, is that the standard for non-Black folks as opposed to Black folks? Why are Black men being pulled over 30, 40 times over their lifetime on average, if that's what the average is, Jim? That's all I'm saying. And that's what the issue is, because I've talked to my law school friends and they're just like, I that's not my experience. If I get pulled over, I'm just wondering, is my insurance, you know, up to date? I never have to worry about whether my life is in jeopardy. But that's never something that they have to cross their mind, and that's what the concern is. So that's what the question's about.
Listen, I'm not saying that there's a right and wrong. I'm not saying I understand. All I'm trying to get you guys to understand is that every scenario is not as cut and dry as you guys would like to make it in terms of the racial profile and things. Zeller, I don't know that guy. They say he says he was pulled over 30 or 40 times. Did he have that all written down in some diary on this date? This is what happened, or is this just something he said? I don't know.
What records are available in regards to that? And maybe I looked into it.
One of the things that they have in here, because I see our time is running out. They want to be whites, browns, yellows get pulled over with the same crook characteristics in similar situations, not just Black people, is what this person is saying. But look, this one of the things they want by this new law is that they want to be able to have the duty of a police officer to intervene when another police officer uses excessive force. That's part of this bill. I don't know what police officer is going to make a determination whether it's excessive force at that time. And you may not have time to try to figure something like that out. Okay, so I don't think that that's just that, it's just that simple. But I want to make one other thing before we have to go. Tim Scott last year brought up police reform, and it was shot down last year, filibustered by the Democrats last year when he tried to bring up these same points, and I've got them all listed here. All of these points I just talked to you about in this new bill, but yet the Democrats filibustered him last year and said, no, you know, and now, okay, there's a new sheriff in town, so right away, we got a police reform bill that we want to do. It's all about getting the votes. That's what it's about. But at any rate, I don't care. They want to do police reform, do education, do training. I have no problem with that. I don't know how effective any of that stuff's going to be, because I think on an individual basis is where the issue lies, not with the department itself. Closing statement, Jamal, real quick, and Zeller, because we got
Hey, man, enjoy y'all week. Thanks for tuning in once again. Tune back in next Sunday for the next argument.
Our next Sunday is Mother's Day, too.
Oh, you know what? That's going to bring up another issue. If that's Mother's Day, how many people are going to be listening? We got to figure that one out. But hey, right. Hey, everybody, thank you so much for listening. Do us a favor. If you like what you heard, spread the word.
Happy Mother's Day next week.
If we're not on the air, I'm not sure yet. We need to talk about that. All right. All right. Take care, everybody. Until next week or the week after.
Bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with James Potts and co-hosts Jamal Potts and Zaylor Stout, only on LA Talk Radio.